doing. And so it is always nice to be able to meet with listeners throughout the my normal activities during the week. And you know, I was watching Robert Morris, one of his sermons here not too long ago, and he talked about after he wrote the book, The Blessed Life, and he wrote a couple other books that ended up being bestsellers as well, that he would be preaching, and he said there wasn't all that much as far as internet or anything like that, where people really didn't know who he was. He wasn't on television yet. And so when he would go to preach, people would all have this same look about them, and the look was, you know, well, you don't look like what we thought you would look like. And so he said about the fourth or the fifth church that he went to, he finally said, you know what I'm going to do. He got up there and he said, that's okay. You don't look like what I thought you would look like either. And, you know, everybody hears voices and they think that they know what that person looks like. And you know, you see a picture of me, I hope that you have somebody pictured in your mind that loves Jesus. That's what I really care about. I'm not all that tall. My hair is much more executive blonde these days than it was when I was younger, and I could afford to lose a pound or two. Now you know a general description of what I look like, but the thing I really want you to know about me is I love Jesus, and I want to be the best me that I can be for his glory, and I want you to be the best you can be for his glory. So we are in Psalm 37. We have just finished going through verses 1 through 8. And verse number 6 said, and he shall bring forth your righteousness as light and your justice as the noonday. Now we're going to drop down to verse number 27 because we're not through with this concept of justice in this Psalm of David yet. Verse number 27 says this, depart from evil and do good and dwell forevermore. For the Lord loves justice and does not forsake his saints. They are preserved forever, but the descendants of the wicked shall be cut off. The righteous shall inherit the land and dwell in it forever. The mouth of the righteous speaks wisdom, and his tongue talks of justice. The law of his God is in his heart. None of his steps shall slide. So, I want to point out to you verse number 27. The first, let's just look at verse number 27 as a whole. Depart from evil and do good and dwell forevermore. So the last part of verse number 3 says, dwell in the land and feed on his faithfulness. The middle part of verse number 27 says, and do good. The middle part of verse number 3 says, do good. The first part of verse number 3 says, trust in the Lord. The first part of verse number 27 says, depart from evil. Those two verses are pretty similar. Now, here's what I can tell you. You cannot be living an evil, wicked, sinful lifestyle and simultaneously be trusting in the Lord. You can't do it. You have to choose one or the other. If you're going to trust in the Lord, then justice is going to be a manifest reality in your life. And there's some really great truths here in verses 27 through 31 that I want to bring out for you. If you depart from evil, I can tell you this, injustice is going to be a frequent visitor to your life timeline. Okay? You and I, we need to have the mindset of not wanting any part of evil manifesting in our life. We don't want to welcome it. We don't want to embrace it. we don't want to redefine it so that it is socially or practically acceptable. We need to depart from it. We need to flee from it. In fact, when I was looking up the meaning of this word, it means to apostatize. It means to abandon it completely. Apostasy is normally something that is referred to as for people who are departing the faith. In the New Testament, it talks about people who are apostasied. You know, they're committing apostasy. They are departing from the faith. Well, believers, we have something that we have got to depart from, where we need to have such a radical transformation in our lifestyle that people say they're committed apostasy. Only they're not apostatizing the faith. They've apostatized evil. So we've been watching a lot of Robert Morris videos because you can see them on YouTube and stuff like that. And he talked about how one of the, he and his wife had gone to one of their high school reunions, and it had been quite a while back. While they were there, there was a lady that came up and was pretty intoxicated and was asking, "Hey, what are you doing?" And he said, "Well, I'm a minister." And she kind of backed away and she's meant, you know, are you talking like a foreign minister? And he said, "No, like a minister. And she said, "A minister like working in a church?" And he said, "Yes." And she got this really confused look on her face. And she said, "Weren't you a drug dealer in high school?" And he was. And, you know, he's very open about his conversion experience and the life that he led before that and everything. But that's part of his past. It's what he departed from. And when you have departed from it, people may know you from your past, but when they know what you have left behind, it's going to be very persuasive. It enhances your testimony. So he went on in that same video and he talked about a person who he said that they were stoned. They were high. And while they were high, they decided they were going to try and commit suicide. And he described a method that he used to try and commit suicide. And it was very hot. And he said, "You know what? I don't want to go to hell." And so he asked the Lord to forgive him of his sins, and there was a radical transformation in his life. He didn't understand, you know, the Bible too well. He didn't understand, you know, evangelism methods or anything like that. And he was talking to a friend, and he told his story to him about how he had departed from the drugs and the evil and all that sort of stuff. And he said, "Well, how did you do that?" And I don't want to, you know, tell you what the guy said, but he walked him through the same process, and it was a very hot experience. And he said, "You feel that heat in there?" And he said, "Yeah, it's really, really hot." And he said, "Well, do you want to go to hell? Because it's even hotter in hell than it is here." And he said, "No." And he led him to the Lord like that. The first guy ended up being a pastor. Because he departed from evil. Right now, there are two mindsets in religious circles on evil. You would think there would only be one. There's only one that's biblical, but there's multiple viewpoints out there. And one of them is this to depart from it, to get rid of it, don't have anything to do with it, and you want to live as pure and a holy life as you possibly can. The second is this. Well, what we need to do is we need to make accommodation for it. We don't want these people feeling bad about themselves. We don't want them, you know, having self-esteem issues and all of that. And so what we're going to do is we're just either not going to deal with it, or we're going to redefine it as some other, using some other term, so that people feel good about themselves. Well, I don't want to feel good about myself if it means that it's going to cost me my relationship with Jesus Christ. I don't. The truth of the matter is this. When the standard of holiness and the standard of righteousness has been lowered, there has never been a revival. But when the Holy Spirit moves in an individual's heart and they make a conscious choice and say, I choose God over the devil. I choose good and holy and righteous over that which is evil and impure and sinful, revival happens. Revival happens. Depart from evil. We've already talked about that. That word evil there. Now this surprised me. I went looking for and expecting that I was going to find that the Hebrew word meant one thing. It didn't. It had several other meanings. Not only does it mean evil, but it means depart from evil, depart from bad, depart from adversity, depart from affliction, depart from hurt, depart from misery, depart from sorrow. See, evil is bad, not good, so we need to depart from it. It has an adverse relationship. It causes us to have an adversarial relationship when it comes to God. We don't want that. Okay? But that evil also brings affliction. You know, whenever you are experiencing sin, sickness, affliction in your body, please understand that's not God punishing you. Okay? It is a reality that we live in a fallen world due to sin being embraced by Adam in the garden. Okay? Now, it is true that Jesus came and established a new covenant, and because of that covenant, he brought healing. So instead of evil, he brought holiness. Instead of bad, he brought blessing. Instead of adversity, he brought adoption into the household of faith. Instead of affliction, he brought healing. Instead of hurt, he felt good. He brought feeling good. Instead of misery, he brought joy. And instead of sorrow, he brought rejoicing. Okay? So when you look at all of those things, I want to ask you, is there some of those concepts that the devil is trying to get you to accept into your life as just a manifest reality of, well, this is who you are? You know, you're just going to have to live with this. Listen, every person can make the decision to be a chain breaker, if you will, in regards to generational vices. People, you know, where, you know, well, my parents were alcoholics, their parents were alcoholics, and the parents before them were alcoholics. Well, make a decision that that's going to end with you, and that your kids are going to have a new legacy, a legacy of righteousness, a legacy that God is going to bring blessing to you and your children, and let's see, what does Carrie Jobe say? To you and your family and your children and their children and their children, to 1,000 generations. That means it just goes on into perpetuity, forever. You know, what is it that you need to leave behind. One of those words is the word misery. Now, when I think of a miserable person, I think of Leah in the book of Genesis. Leah was the older sister of Rachel, whom Jacob had fallen in love with. Jacob loved Rachel. Rachel was described as beautiful, and Leah was described as somebody who had comely eyes. I mean, they were just looking for something that they could describe her as you know, beautiful. If you go back and read the story, you see that Laban cons Jacob. Jacob thinks he's marrying Rachel, and Laban wasn't confident that he was ever going to receive a dowry for anybody wanting to marry Leah. That tells you, you know, about what he thought his prospects were of her. Leah was not loved by her father. Leah was not loved by her sister. There was a terrible sibling rival. She wasn't loved by her husband. And so she adopted a mindset that since she was married to Jacob, that she would try and earn his affection. And so Rachel was not bearing kids, and Leah had Reuben, and she had two other kids, and she was still miserable. She was still miserable. I think the other two were Simeon and Levi. They're the first three. And when she had Levi, she said, "Surely my husband will become attached to me now." And then she got pregnant again. And that fourth child, when it came time to name that child, she named him Judah, which means praise. And what she decided was she was going to praise the Lord. She wasn't going to be miserable any longer. She went on and named some other kids. She named them Gad, which meant fortunate or powerful. She named it Asher, which meant happy. If you study the relationship with Leah, you will find that there was a transformative moment where she departed from misery and chose blessing and joy and trusting in God. And it changed her life to the point that when Jacob died in Egypt, he said, "Bury me, but don't bury me in Egypt." He could have said, "Bury me beside Rachel, by the tree." You know, everybody knew the tree where Rachel was buried. He could have said, "Bury me there beside Rachel, the one that I love." But instead he said, "Bury me where I buried Leah, next to Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Rebecca." Depart. What is it that you have in your life that if you really want justice to manifest in your life, that you've got to say, I'm willing to completely abandon these things in my life. You know, a lot of people love fighting. They love adversity. You know, a lot of people feed on that. "Well, nobody believes in me, so I'm going to prove them wrong." Years and years ago, we were watching a particular episode of I think the program was called Chopped. I'm sure it's still on. I'm pretty sure it was a Chopped episode. And all of the contestants that were on that particular episode were people who had been, very large at some point in time, and they had a transformation when it came to their attitude with food. And they all got up there with basically the same testimony. "Everybody picked on me when I was in high school. Nobody wanted to believe in me. Everybody thought I was a loser. And I'm going to show them, because I'm going to come on this program and and I'm going to show them that I'm a winner because of my attitude. And there's going to be a judge that's going to validate me. They're going to give me a trophy. They're going to give me a $10,000 check. And that'll really show those people. And nobody talked about, hey, I just wanted to do this for myself. I know a person and they said, I needed to make a change in my life because I wanted to be the best me that I could be, not only for me, but so that other people would enjoy the best me. Okay? And so they did. They intentionally set out to depart from being miserable or being controlled by food or adversity. Listen, I've told you on this program that the first pastor that I worked for said that I was useless and I would never amount to anything in the ministry. I want you to know I'm not in the ministry because I'm trying to prove him wrong. I'm in the ministry because God called me into the ministry. What that person said is not my motivation. Is it part of my background? Yes. Is it something that I still remember? Yes, but I don't use it as motivation for me. I use it to tell people if other people have said adverse things about you, they can be wrong. They may actually think that they are right. But don't live under their mandate. Live under what God has said about you. Now, here's a little bit more of a challenge where you've been hurt. The last two here, you know, trauma is something that is very difficult to get over. When I was in Little League, the coach had positioned me at third base. I did not have a third base type of arm back then. Don't have a third base arm now. But this was practice, and so everybody kind of rotated around. And he hit a ground ball, and we did not have the pristine Little League fields that kids have now. Ours were, you know, hey, let's see if we can't, you know, make this patch of field at least a little bit smooth so we can, you know, have a baseball field. And so he hits this grounder. He had played minor league ball and was a very good baseball player. And so he hits a pretty firm ground ball, and I am in position to catch the ball. My glove is down on the ground. I'm positioned right where it's going to go, right between my legs if I miss it. And about 2 feet in front of my glove, it hits this little rock, which launches it up, and it smacks me right in the mouth. And it hurt. Practice comes to a halt. And as soon as we realized that it still had not corrected my overbite, that he puts me right back on third base. And he says, now I want you to keep your glove down on the ground. And he hits a ground ball exactly like he hit it the last time. And when it got to about a foot before it, I automatically pulled my glove up. You know why? Because I was trying to protect myself from getting hurt the way that I did the last time. Some of you have been hurt. Some of you have been hurt by words that other people have said. Some of you have been hurt by past relationships. Some of you have been hurt because of a number of other things. Don't let past hurt steal present and future blessings from your life. The last one is even harder to get through, and that is sorrow. Now, I want you to understand that God created us as emotional beings. He never intended for us to experience sorrow, but he equipped us so that when man fell, we would be able to adjust and to overcome. And so Jesus was a man of sorrows. He is acquainted with grief, but it is not supposed to govern your life. Okay? At some point in time, the time of mourning has to come to an end. The time of grieving has got to cease, and you've got to say, I'm moving on from that. For some, you know, some people want to put a number of days on it. I can't put the number of days on it for you. I can't. For some people, it was 40 days. For some people, it was 80 days in the Bible. For some people, God said, look, I don't want you going through a grieving process for this at all. And that's very, very difficult. And when that happens, people say, you're going to have to explain this to us because it isn't what we are expecting. God does not want us to be in bondage to evil or any of the manifestations of it. He wants us to depart from that. And so if you've experienced those things, allow God to heal you so that you can trust in him, so that you can do good and dwell forevermore in the land. Depart from evil, do good, and dwell forevermore. God bless you. Thank you for tuning in today. We'll be back tomorrow right here on the Refresh.
Thank you for tuning in today to Refresh with Pastor Bob Arthurs. Refresh is brought to you by the church family of Merritt Assembly of God in Merritt Island, Florida. If you do not have a church home, we invite you to visit with us this Sunday. We have Sunday school at 9:30 a.m. and worship at 10:30 a.m. We are located at 165 North Grove Street on Merritt Island. You can discover more about the church through our website, MerrittAssembly.com. Email us any prayer needs and testimonies to MerrittAssembly@hotmail.com. We invite you to tune in Monday through Friday on WMIE 91.5 at 8:30 a.m. and 5 o'clock p.m. and WWBC 1510 at 10:30 a.m. Remember, Proverbs 11:25, he who refreshes others will himself be refreshed.
Sin for us.